Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
You're listening to Kaya Biz. Now, we've just been speaking about luxury. That's one of the things when it comes to politicians and business people that can catch them out when they are, you know, not doing the things that they're supposed to do when there's a bit of malfeasance or corruption. Let's speak to Stephen Powell, the head of the forensics department at law firm ENS Africa. Stephen, thanks for your time on Kaya Biz this evening. Just explain to us what a lifestyle audit is and why, especially in the private sector, these may happen.
Great to speak to you, Nzinga, and thank you for having me this evening. Mm-hmm. The lifestyle audit is such an important mechanism for companies to proactively identify fraud. And what happens with crooks, fraudsters can't resist spending the money from their ill-gotten gains on cars, luxury properties, and going on expensive, extravagant holidays, buying the expensive gifts. We heard all about watches and mm-hmm. how that can be an investment also for the fraudsters. So the lifestyle audit is one of the most important mechanisms that companies, both in the private and the public sector, use to identify crooks proactively.
Uh-huh. And what's the decision around a lifestyle audit? How does a private or public company say, this one, we need to look further into that? And how do you actually do one?
So the lifestyle audit has to be done responsibly, and it is very important that when we look at lifestyle audits, we observe POPIA, the Protection of Personal Information Act, and we've got to make sure that companies don't adopt mechanisms that are too evasive. But there's a lot of public information that is available about each and every one of us. We've all heard and seen how much information we can find on the internet. So social media is one of the areas that we gather information, and mm-hmm. we can see a lot of what is happening through social media. And then there's public databases like the deeds databases, which is completely public, and we can see what properties are registered to an individual. And we can also see whether that property was encumbered, whether it was bonded or not. Mm-hmm. And when a property worth millions is acquired without a bond, it's often a red flag for potential fraudulent activity. Mm-hmm. And then you can also easily work out what the repayment on the bond would be. And if you've got an individual with a relatively low level of income, but an expensive bond commitment or property acquired without a bond, that's a typical red flag that we latch onto. And the same applies to motor vehicles.
I like how you spoke about the privacy or POPIA and making sure that there isn't invasive. But there is something quite invasive about looking at somebody and going, no, actually, we want to just make sure that your lifestyle matches the monies that are coming in. I know there's also been by politicians who say, you know, people criminalize black wealth. Some politicians say, you know, lifestyle audits criminalize black wealth, and people think that people can't do well, and they want to investigate them. Take us through the practicalities of a lifestyle audit. And I know you've spoken to us about when, but why in particular in the private sector and in the public sector?
So the lifestyle audit, boards are always inquiring, you know, how do we catch crooks before we actually incur losses? What are the steps that we can do? And there's two key mechanisms here, Nzinga. The first is the lifestyle audit is one of the mechanisms just to check that people aren't living extravagant lifestyles. And the lifestyle that people enjoy should be commensurate to the income that they earn. So when you see individuals that are flying overseas regularly, that are driving fancy cars, you know, I think 2-3 times a year we get asked to investigate an individual who has bought a brand new sports car. And mm-hmm. when we look at source of income, the salary is limited. There's no way that this could be acquired legitimately unless there's been an inheritance or a lotto win. And obviously mm-hmm. one needs to check those bases. And potentially there could be a wealthy family member as well, or a spouse that has a good income or an inheritance. So it's not conclusive. It's just an indicator. And companies, you know, with the levels of fraud and corruption that we experience in this country at the moment, c- companies have to do whatever they can to protect themselves, and this is one of the mechanisms. So I spoke earlier about the motor vehicles and the properties, but companies are also specifically allowed to use credit checks to identify potential fraud or corruption. And credit information is also very closely protected in South Africa. We can't just have a look at people without good reason. Yes. But the Credit Act allows companies, employers, to look at credit information for both fraud prevention as well as fraud detection. So it is a legitimate mechanism. And what we often see when we do these investigations is we find that someone has an income which may be 50,000 rand a month. But when we look at the credit exposure and the monthly repayments on properties, vehicles, and other expenses, often we'll find that the expenses are double or triple the income, and it's just beyond the ability of the individual to repay. But that in and of itself still doesn't prove fraud or corruption. So then the trick for us as forensic investigators is then to try and determine what are the potential avenues that this individual could be exploiting in order to generate income at the level of that identified during the lifestyle audit. So it's globally, it's been recognized as an important mechanism to prevent fraud. But coupled to that, we also need to make sure that companies have fraud hotlines that they can report when they see symptoms of potential fraud. And if companies have an effective hotline, we often get reports from fellow employees about excessive lifestyles, and sometimes the employer may not see the expensive sports car. The individual will come to work in the old 20-year-old Toyota Corolla that everyone thinks they've been driving for years and leave the Ferraris and the Porsches at home. So these are just some of the mechanisms. But it, as I said in Zynga, the lifestyle audit is probably one of the most critical to tap into.
Those colleagues are sometimes called by the younger ones monitoring spirits, because also you don't pick up things. Sometimes you pick up things because of a hotline, as you've said, or colleague reporting something. And I know I'm saying this slightly tongue-in-cheek, but social media and the projection, especially in a big city, in Johannesburg, in New York, wherever, people also like projecting a lifestyle that they may not have. Aspirationally, you know, I know people who hire luxury vehicles to take content for, you know, and they'll spread that content out over 3 to 6 months. You think a person is driving a Rolls Royce, they've just hired it for the day and they've gone to different locations, changed their makeup and done the like. People do that with private jets as well. But then there are also people who hide this opulence. So I just wanted to find out what's the threshold, and there must be a number of steps that are taken. So there's a reporting either by a colleague or a company that's saying, you know, I'd like to maybe put this person on my board, or I'm unsure about this employee. What are the steps?
So the steps are, you know, if you're going to appoint someone to your board, you need to screen and you need to check that the individual does not have an adverse history, so that there aren't any prior corrupt activities or criminal prosecutions or investigations. So doing the checks and screening through media and social media as well is important as a first step. The important thing as well is to make sure that when you do these checks, I spoke about Popier earlier, we've got to make sure we do it in a responsible way. So many organizations have actually developed a lifestyle audit policy which sets out the rules for the lifestyle audit, and we do adhere to that. But what also happens is, you know, there may be fraud or corruption in the company, there may be bleeding in the company. Management will come to us and say, Steve, we've got a problem, we're so busy, we should be making a fortune, but we're struggling financially, and the company is hemorrhaging, we just don't know where the bleed lies. And then it's quite a challenge for us to come in and investigate and identify exactly where the problem is. And that's where we do rely on tip-off hotlines and making sure that colleagues feel comfortable reporting, that they won't be victimized or face recrimination if they report concerns. And this is also where we will then do a lifestyle audit. When we do an investigation, the lifestyle audit is what we typically also refer to as suspect profiling. We try and know as much about the suspect as possible, and we will access all of these various public databases. We don't access personal financial information of a suspect because that is highly confidential and protected by law. But if we do have a solid suspicion and a basis to investigate, then we will register a criminal case and we will ask the authorities to issue a subpoena so that we can then be able to access the financial information and records that we need to confirm the fraud or corrupt activity. But I do want to touch on, Nzinga, there's been a change in our legislation, which I think listeners should also be aware of. The country is about to, and we're still holding thumbs, that we will be taken off the grey listing. But the grey listing brought a plethora of change in the legal framework. And these changes include Section 34A of PRECA, the Prevention of Combating and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act. And that has introduced, 34A has introduced a new offence called the failure to prevent corrupt activity. And what that means is any company can be prosecuted for the acts of its employees if they get involved in acts of corruption, if they haven't put in place measures to prevent corruption. Okay. And this is where the whistleblower hotline, the lifestyle audit, the fraud and corruption policies, as well as training, due diligence, monitoring, and doing risk assessments, all feature in terms of protecting the organization against corruption. So it is actually a legal requirement to do whatever you can to prevent the fraud or corruption. And in the UK, just a couple of weeks ago, they've introduced a failure to prevent fraud offense, and I'm sure South Africa will follow suit in coming months.
Yeah, as we wrap up, Stephen, can you just take us or give us an example of, obviously without any identifiers, of how a lifestyle audit has actually uncovered fraud or corruption within a business?
Certainly. We've done so many of these, Nzinga, but one example is we had a young manager at one of our clients' warehouses who bought a brand new Audi A5. With all the extras, the vehicle was worth about R1 million. Our client said the salary of that individual was R30,000. There was just no way that he could afford it. When we investigated that individual, we did the lifestyle audit and we checked everything, and there didn't seem to be a legitimate explanation for this change in lifestyle. But we also noticed that he was in business with a fellow director, and when we zoomed in on this, the client was very distressed. They said to us, why would our director be in business with his subordinate? And even though it wasn't a direct conflict of interest because it was a fishing business, they were still concerned about the director. And that led us to do a comprehensive lifestyle audit on the director. And when we analyzed the director, we found that he had a business moving product, a courier type business. And when we checked on that business, the first check we did was to determine, did the company spend money with this entity? And we saw that a lot of invoices to the value of about R4 million had been approved by the director. And he was the service provider as well. And when we analyzed the work that was done, we discovered that he had taken services rendered by other vendors and just invoiced for it. And he was sending invoices to himself, approving it. And he would never have been identified had it not been for the lifestyle audit on the junior. So we do get results all of the time through these lifestyle audits, and where people live beyond their means, and there's usually an explanation, a hidden source of income, and often that source of income is fraud or kickbacks through corruption.
All right. Stephen Powell, head of the forensics department at law firm ENS Africa. Thanks for your time on Kaya Biz this evening. Just taking us through lifestyle audits in the private and public sector, the reasons behind them, the privacy that has to be followed, and how they work in the end. Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you. Thanks, Nzinga. Thank you, listeners.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.